Verdugo back to the pin. He caught it. He took it back.
He's doing everything right now.
That ball is gone. What a bullet by Devers.
I love to see the exit velocity on that one.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the TC and Jerry podcast. Tom, Karen, Jerry, Remy, we are no closer to each other, but we're getting closer to baseball. Grapefruit League games this Sunday, just a few days away from baseball returning to JetBlue Park. Jerry, how are you?
I'm doing well, TC. How are you doing? I'm looking forward to Monday. We got a game on Nesson on Monday, so I'm looking forward to that.
Might be seven innings, it sounds like. You okay with that?
I'm great with that. Yeah.
You know, spring training is going to be interesting, right? Because they actually made the rule. They can go down as short as five innings if they want.
Right.
Alex Cora told us over the weekend, he thinks they'll go seven innings on their games. They're going to stop innings if the pitch is over 20 or 25 pitches. You know, and I know this might be annoying for fans. Like, wait, what's going on? There's two guys on. There's a guy. But this is good for spring training, right? You don't need a bunch of guys wearing 98 coming in just to fill out the inning, fill out the nine innings. Get these guys in, get their work, and let's move on.
Well, one thing I've learned that doing this for 33 years and going into my 34th is the last three innings of spring training, I don't think you ever need, because you have players coming up from God knows where. You have no idea who they are. Their numbers never match what they put on the sheet of paper that they give you to identify these guys. And so my favorite story was once Ned Martin had no idea. My first part of Ned Martin had no idea who was in the game. It was toward the end of the game. And we were playing the Tigers, so he just called them Tony Tiger. So, you know, that's kind of how it gets in spring training. And it's you know, the first five innings are usually pretty good. After that, it's just a guessing game out there.
All right, I'll tell you my story like that. This is a true story. It's probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, maybe longer. And you guys are doing the game, and I'm the sideline reporter. Final game of spring training. We were over at Hammond, whatever it's called now, but the stadium, the Twins.
Yeah.
And it was one of those, they're trying to fly through this game, right? The starters are already out of the game. They're on the bus. They're already back, ready to fly home. They're flying out, flying north right after the game. And there's a guy who comes out in right field for the eighth or ninth inning. It must have been a little while ago, because I think Orsillo was still the play-by-play. And I hear you guys talking. It might have been Dave. I don't remember. But you guys are talking about who's in right field. You know, you guys are trying to figure it out. Nobody knows. My phone rings. It's Kevin Gregg, head of PR, from up in the press box, seeing if I can find out who's in right field, because they don't know who's in right field. No, it gets better. So I lean over. I'm just beyond the dugout, right? I lean over. Chili Davis was the hitting coach, so that'll tell you when it was. I go, Chili, who's in right field? He gives one of these, like, long looks. And looks over me and goes, I got no idea. So the PR department didn't know. The coaching staff didn't. Come to find out, it was like a single A guy that they threw on the bus as it was pulling out, just in case.
Right.
You can call that the beauty of spring training, but when you're broadcasting the games, it's not beautiful.
No, I call it the fog of spring training, because once they start making those changes, it takes at least two innings to figure out who's where. And then you got to try to get the names right. So you know, spring training is not my favorite time of the year. I mean, it's exciting because you're starting baseball again. But from an announcer's point of view, man, I can't wait till opening day.
I think I've done more when you're the backup play-by-play guy, I think I've done more spring training games than I've done regular season games, right? So, and then the funny thing is, like, I would have bet the house that Chad De La Guerra was going to be the greatest player in Major League history, right? Because that's I saw him. I saw him more than I saw Xander Bogaerts, right?
Yeah.
Zhu Wei Lin was going to be a superstar because I saw him play seven innings every day. It's funny how certain guys play a lot of spring training innings.
They really do, you know, and there's always like, there's like three shifts. It's the first shift that plays a couple of at-bats. Then they bring in this normal second shift, and you kind of get to know these guys because you right. see them every day. And then that third shift comes in, and, well, you got no clue. I mean, it's amazing they even have Red Sox on the front of their uniforms.
All right, so before we get into what's going on down at spring training, let's talk about what's going on in the world, right? The vaccine is rolling out. You and I have talked about this a lot. And as we sit here, You are just a few days away from getting your vaccination,
yes,
right?
Yes, we're very excited about it. You know, we finally, it was tough getting through. It really was. It was, because it went from 65 and older, and of course, those with underlying conditions below that. So it was very difficult. The first day that we went on, the website totally crashed. And then we had a friend that was actually trying along with us. So we were constantly on the computer trying to get through. And our friend was able to nail down two appointments at Gillette Stadium coming Thursday and Friday of this week. My wife, Phoebe, goes on Thursday. I'm going to take a ride down just to see if, maybe there's a possibility that they can sneak me in on Thursday. If not, then I go back on Friday. So by the end of this week, we'll have our first round of vaccines, which I'm very excited about because, this has all become ridiculous. It's, I haven't seen my grandkids since probably October, November, sometime in there. And, we're just so anxious to get this just taken care of and get it done. And, then you make your appointment, I guess, right on the spot for your second vaccine. So within a month, both vaccines should be done. And we're very excited about it.
Yeah, it's funny. We're in it's an anxious time, I think. When my wife and I were talking about that today, because we're not going to get one for a long time. We're healthy. Right. We're a little younger. And it's, we haven't seen our older son who lives in Vermont. We haven't seen him since October. And it's, you're watching people get vaccinated and you're so happy that people are getting vaccinated, but it's that calm before, it's the darkest before the dawn thing, right? You got to just be patient. Like, my wife's like, we got to get it and let's get going. And we're not going to get it for months.
Yeah.
So I'm so happy for you because that's a, that'll be a big step forward for you.
Yeah, really will. It's going to take a lot of pressure off because, I've been doing nothing but sitting in this house for all winter long. And, it comes to a point where you start going crazy. And, the fact is because of my past history and the fact that COVID's out there, I have to be extra careful because my immunity is not as great as it once was. And, so I'm more vulnerable to getting it. So, I've been extra cautious by staying in the house and the same thing with my wife. And, it's been, it's time to get back to some sort of normality, whatever that's going to be, but at least we'll feel more secure and at least be able to see our grandkids and do things that we enjoy doing, once we get completed with these two vaccines. So, I'd say it was not easy getting them. It's tough getting them. But the fact is we were lucky enough to get in this week and we're looking forward to tomorrow. And I mean, actually Thursday and Friday.
Well, the good news is every week that goes by, more people get it. We all get that much closer to getting it. The more people that get it, the virus starts to trickle down. So it's all good. Just we're all getting a little impatient now about getting back to normal.
Oh, yeah.
This is the hardest part,
Yeah.
It's been a long winter. Winter sitting in the house.
Very long winter on a lot of fronts.
All right. On the baseball front, we're not there, but they're working out. We get, like you said, first game's coming up this weekend. JD Martinez is a really interesting guy, right? I mean, this guy has been one of the best hitters in baseball for years now, right? And 18, 19, first 2 years in the Red Sox, more RBI than anybody else in baseball. Yeah. And so this guy did everything the Red Sox wanted him to. He comes last year and we have spring training, he's ready to go. Then we all shut down for a few months. Then he has just a brutal year. I mean, not like anything we've seen from him before. And I've become this winter, you're not going to like this. I'm diving into even more into the analytics this winter because I've got nothing else to do. So I've become a huge OPS plus guy, Jerry.
OPS
adjusted OPS plus. And you're going to hear me talk about that a lot this year. So just, and it's a good, 100 is league average, right? Yeah. So anything over 100, you're that much better than league average. And this is a guy, JD Martinez, who, 2018 was 173, right? I mean, that's, you're talking about elite, 140. And do that. Last year was 81. So literally below league average. I'm not talking below the best. I'm talking average. He was, that basically a replacement player would do what he could do. We've never seen anything like that from him. And we're going to hear from him in a second. But I just think coming into this, Jerry, he might be, in a lot of ways, the most important offensive player on the team this year, because if he's back, that offense should be back.
No, it should be an offense that scores a lot of run, and of course he has to be back to be able to do that. And I don't have any doubt in my mind, a player doesn't just fall apart in 1 year. I mean, there are players who have off years occasionally and they bounce back and do what they normally do, but I've never seen a guy drop the way JD dropped last year. And that OPS plus that you're talking about is probably going to way back over 100 this year. And I wouldn't be surprised at all. You know, he's had a chance during the offseason. He's that type of guy that just looks after film, works hard on his hitting. And you know, he knows what makes him successful and what doesn't. And you think about last year, TC, you know, not only the fact that, you know, if you got off to a slow start, you didn't have time to regroup because you only played 60 games and you were totally lost. The whole disruption of what you do on a daily basis as a player was a mess last year. And nobody, you know, a guy that relies so much on routine like JD Martinez does had to be completely lost last year. So I'm with you. I totally believe. Matter of fact, you know, when I look at the lineup, I look at a very good lineup, I think, that's going to score a bunch of runs. And I include him in that. I for no reason at all think that he's going to have a down year like he did last year. It's not even close. It's not like this guy just forgot how to hit. I think a lot of the circumstances that went on last year were part of the reason he got like that. And then when you get like that, somebody who gets locked in as much as he does and as much as he does with what he's doing, when he struggles, they start thinking an awful lot. They start thinking a lot, you know, and they start thinking too much, I think. And they're searching for things that probably are not even there. So, you know, I think with the offseason and with him, you know, going to spring training, I think it's big that he has a good spring training. I don't put a lot of stock a lot of times in spring training, but I think for certain guys it's important. I think for him it is to get his confidence back.
He was thinking a lot about it, and here's what he said just yesterday or today, talking about what he's thinking about this offseason, how to get back on track.
You know, it was obviously a rough 2 months. And it was one of those things I felt like I really wasn't prepared for last year. Felt like it kind of caught me off guard with whether we were going to play, whether we weren't, stuff like that. So I just kind of went back to doing the same thing I always do and staying ready, staying prepared for the whole season, you know, like I usually do. I felt like last year when they shut down spring training, it was one of those things where like, are we going to play? Are we not? Type deal. And you know, it was my fault. I take accountability for that because I didn't stay ready. And I think this year I said to myself, I said, they're not getting me again. They're not catching me off guard. So, you know, I stayed ready the whole time. I think I got a little bit of chip on my shoulder. You know, I've always played with that. I've always played with that chip, you know, just having to prove people wrong and, you know, my whole career. And I think it kind of might have, you know, went away in a little bit, but I think I got a little bit back now. Kind of, I created some really, really bad habits in my swing and I didn't even notice it at the time, you know, and kind of just, you know, it took me a while to figure out what was the actual cause of it, really. What was causing this move that I was making? Literally spent a lot of time on it, trying new things in the cages. I remember during 1 week we were in the cage from freaking like, I think like 9 a.m. or 10 a.m. to like 6 p.m. at night for like a week straight, just right when I started hitting. Like, okay, let's get to start off right away and let's eliminate everything and get to the source so that we know what to work on the entire offseason. And, you know, I feel like we did a good job of it and I'm excited for the season, honestly. You know, I spent an entire year doing the moves wrong. So like I said before, from the beginning when I made my swing changes, my swing was never a natural swing for me. It was a swing I had to teach myself. I had to work on it. I had to show myself the right moves. And it's something that I got to continue to work on and continue to grind. There's never like, I can't sit here and say, yeah, guys, I fixed it. I'm back. You know what I mean? Cause it's not like that. It's not baseball. The moment you think you got it figured out, this game humbles you real quick. So it's one of those things I got to keep working and stick to the process.
So JD Martinez is talking about spending 8, 9, 10 hours a day in the batting cage this offseason. I'm trying to think of Jerry Remy back home for the winter. It's like finding a batting cage in New England that you can spend 8, 9, 10 hours in.
We used to spend an hour a day at Tufts University when I was playing. And that's where we got a chance to work out, an hour a day. And we'd have about 4 or 5 guys there. Now I spend 8, 9 hours a day in my chair. So it's not even close to being a batting cage, but you know, that's the way he is. That's the way most professional athletes are. And he's such a perfectionist. He's such a perfectionist that, you know, I have no doubt this guy's going to come back and be a major, major part of this offense.
I think it's interesting because you forget that he got let go by the Houston Astros.
Right.
Released. So he's been through this before. This isn't a guy who is struggling for the first time in his career, right? This is a guy who struggled, rebuilt his swing, and he said that, just completely retooled it and became one of the best hitters. So I think that where sometimes you look at a guy like Andrew Benintendi, we will see if Andrew Benintendi can come back. You and I both think he'll have a bounce back here, but we'll see. Because he's never struggled in his life.
Right.
JD has struggled. JD's been through this. JD has gotten through this. I think that'll help him get through it this time.
Well, and I think he's also a very proud guy, you know, and he's embarrassed by what he did last year. He's embarrassed to have other players look at those numbers and say, that's JD Martinez. You know, so when you get a little chip on your shoulder like that, like he's probably got right now, that makes you work even harder and harder. So, you know, and I never questioned his work ethic. It was not that. I just think he was so totally confused a year ago. I think the change and everything, he threw a lot of players off a year ago. And I think this will be more normal for him this year if they play the whole season and he's able to get his reps in during spring training and early in the season. And he's going to be just fine. I don't worry about him at all. I really don't. I think he's going to be just fine.
Here's another reason why I believe in the offense. Christian Vasquez is, I think we overlook him sometimes. He's become one of the best hitting catchers in all of baseball. And I talked with him on our show Back to Work. And it's interesting that he's been here since 2014. It's one year after Xander Bogaerts. He's really become the elder statesman. He's the catcher. It's his team. He handles the pitching staff. Here's what he had to say.
It's a lot of new faces. I feel like I'm the oldest in this team right now. we have a great pitching staff. We need to stay healthy. You know, that's the key for everything. We need to stay healthy and play hard every day. Like AC tell us, like play hard, quick, and fast. And I think we're going to be in good shape.
You know, you talk about the pitching staff. You got some newcomers here. You got veterans like Richards and Andrees and Ottavino, a lot of young guys in there as well. Have you had a chance to catch anybody yet? Is there anybody who has already impressed you even in these early stages?
Yeah, I caught yesterday Andreese and Ottavino. And Ottavino, the first slider he threw me, thank God I don't need to face him again. it's fun to see those guys. You know, they have great weapons in the mound, and it's gonna be fun year to catch them. And it's I hope I can block everything so I can help them.
You know, you mentioned you're the older guy now. It happens fast, and you look on the pitching side, like Eduardo Rodriguez, right? All of a sudden, he's a veteran on that staff.
Yeah,
didn't throw a pitch last year. You and he, and you've really brought out the best in him over the years. You've been together a lot. How important is it to have Eddie back healthy and ready to go?
Yeah, exciting to see him back. With the uniform, you know, it's tough to, you know, what happened last year with him, you know, he can't control that, you know, it's part of life, you know, it's something that can happen to everybody, you know, and fortunately happened to him, you know, great key for this organization, great key is our main guy right now. And you know, I'm happy to see him, you know, back in the field.
Eddie said the other day, don't sleep on us. Like, I think there's kind of an attitude here with this team a little bit that you're a little bit of an underdog, but you look around, there's veterans here. How do you feel about this season? Could this be a year where the Red Sox surprise some people?
I think so, yeah. I'm on the same page with Eddie and because if we put everything together and we play like we should play, we're going to be fine. If we control what we can control, that's, you know, the key for play in October. I think less damage and pitching staff, we can control that, you know, make adjustment on the fly. We can control that. And, you know, that's going to help us to win a lot of games. So I think we're in good shape right now.
So, Jerry, I brought up a stat with Christian that we were looking up. I was looking up some numbers. He's one of only three catchers in baseball with 700 plate appearances over the last 2 years. Yeah. And that means you're catching, right? That means you're out there a lot, or last 3 years. I don't think we included the short season. But, you know, this guy and MLB Network did a thing of the 10 best catchers in baseball. He wasn't listed.
Yeah.
Or 20 best. But they had guys who I've never even heard of on that list. I think he's one of the more underappreciated guys in baseball.
Well, you know, I look back at him, you know, when he came to the big leagues and I saw his swing, and his swing was an opposite field swing, which I liked very much. And I said, you know, if this guy can learn how to pull, which guys do as they get older, you know, and get more mature. When you see a young guy come up in the minor leagues, and if you see him in line drives the other way, you're looking at a pretty good hitter. And Xander Bogaerts was the same way. When he first came up, a lot of line drives to the opposite field. As they both matured as players, they started to learn how to pull, when to pull. When do I look for a pitch that's middle in that I can, you know, pull and hit the ball out of the ballpark? And they've both been able to do it. I kind of put them both in the same category because they started very similar as hitters and they have progressed very similar as hitters. And that all comes with experience, you know, and good coaching because, you know, as I got a little bit older, when I was playing, I don't want to go back to the Stone Ages, but the fact is I learned how to pull because I would look for certain pitches inside and be able to pull those in certain situations where I was a complete opposite field hitter. So when I looked at both of those guys coming up to the big leagues, I said, you know, if they can do what they're doing right now, don't lose that, but also be able to learn how to make adjustments to learn how to pull a ball because they both have the ability to hit the ball out of the ballpark. And they've both done that. And so that's very impressive to me. And you're right. You know, you look at some of these rankings of players and, you know, you talk about, you mentioned Vasquez. Bogaerts is another one. You know, you look at his name a lot of times and you don't find it in the top, you know, 5, 6, 7 shortstops. You go, what? Are you kidding me? Is this the same guy I'm watching every day? You know, so Vasquez doesn't get the respect, I think, that he deserves. And let's face it, you know, I watch him behind the plate. He reminds me of Pudge Rodriguez behind the plate, his quick feet, his quick release, his strong throwing arm at second base. You know, I'm not calling him Pudge Rodriguez, don't get me wrong. But the fact is, he reminds me of that. And he reminded me of that when I first saw him. I remember the first spring that I saw him, I went, wow, this guy's got some quick feet and a quick release. You know, now what it's going to turn into, I don't know. But, you know, he's gotten better and better at it. So, you know, I'm with you, TC. I think he's in the top echelon of catches around. And he stays healthy. He's able to play. He stays healthy all the time.
What about handling the pitchers? I mean, there's nobody ever said, but there was always like a little quiet thing early on that he's not that good at handling. Chris Sale always threw to Sandy Leone. But I think he's gotten better, right? I mean, I think these last 2-3 years, he handles the pitching staff fine now.
I think he handles it fine. Look, and I think sometimes too much is made of that. I really do, because who calls the game? The pitchers call the game. They really do. I mean, if they don't like a sign, they shake it off. They want to be on the same page, obviously, so they're not shaking off all the time. But you can tell that sometimes, you know, when you get guys out there and all you're seeing is, you know, no, 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 no. And you get, come on, guys, get together. But, you know, it's the pitchers that call the game. I've never bought that stuff into, you know, well, I can't throw to this guy. Why can't you throw to this guy? You know, you're calling the pitches anyway. You know what you want to throw. It's just that they want to be on the same page. But, yes, he has improved in that part of it. And when he gets in trouble a little bit at times is blocking the ball behind the plate. Sometimes he'll get a little bit lazy back there or a little bit too smooth back there. You know, he might try to backhand a ball that he should have been in front of. But it doesn't usually last very long. You know, he'll get corrected very quickly. And with Cora back, he'll get very corrected very quickly, you know, about stuff like that.
All right, I want to wrap it up talking about Xander Bogaerts. You mentioned him. He spoke to us yesterday, and interesting now. I mean, it's hard to believe 28 years old, but he's got the longest tenure of anybody on this team.
Yeah,
and he's got an opt-out coming after next season. And, we're talking about a rebuild. It's a guy now, as you approach 30, you want this team to be successful now. And here's what he had to say about it.
Xander, I'm curious what you thought about Fernando Tatis's contract, what it means for the shortstop market, and how it might impact you going forward.
It means great. You know, obviously he got a boatload of money, as you would say. So it's good for him, good for his family. He's one of the most talented players in the game as of right now, especially bringing in his age factor. He's so young and so good. All he needs to do is just stay healthy and let those abilities continue to develop and take over, you know, and we'll see how that goes when that time comes, but it's something good for the shortstop class that's going to come up this year, and hopefully all of them get paid the way they want to and help out themselves and also their families.
you have the option to opt out after next year. Does this impact your thinking in any way?
I haven't even thinking of that yet. You know, it's so far down the road. But obviously it's a lot of money, you know, and much deserved, you know. Some can say he deserved even more. But when that time comes, we'll see, we'll go over that and see how that works. But as of now, it's, and I remember when I signed, it was like, you know, it's such a long time before I even be a free agent again. And, you know, it's now it's like some topics that are bouncing around that opt out and stuff like that. So, as I said, time comes by quick. It flies quick. And the time you got to make decisions sometimes come even quicker than you need to, than you anticipated.
There's a lot of talk about the Red Sox kind of building for the next great team, you know, and we've talked a lot about, you've been here a long time. When you think about the future, you know, you would be one guy, I would think, that wants that sped up a little bit. You know, you're not thinking about a 5-year rebuild. You want this team to be competitive now. Do you think you see the pieces around you where that will come together while you're still here at the top of your game?
I think I see a lot of, like, winning mindset, man. As I said, sometimes we will want guys with big names on our teams. You know, who wouldn't want guys like that? You know, a $300 million contract, a $200 million contract on your team, you know, because you know that he's that good. But I think we brought in guys that have a lot of winning experience, guys that have been to the playoff, guys that know how to win. So I think that gets a lot overlooked, you know, and I think that sucks that it's like that. You know, obviously we haven't gotten the most talented second baseman on the free agent market, but we brought in a guy that has been to the playoffs so many years and a guy that has so many experience being in the playoff, and obviously with Marwin the same way. So I'm talking about position player aspect, you know, because I'm a position player, but you can see the mindset that the front office are taking and the direction that they want to go. And if you bring in winning players, I don't see how you're not going to win. So that's the way I look at it.
And do you pay a lot of attention to what other teams do? You know, Toronto was making all those moves. New York's bringing it. Seemed to be all in your division for a while. Do you pay a lot of attention to that in the offseason?
Yeah. A lot of guys have been going into our division. You know, like Tampa lost a couple pitchers, but they got a couple back, you know. And Toronto signing Springer and helping out that young core. Obviously, the Yankees, they're going to have some guys back from injury. So, as I said, we just got to stay healthy. I know it's 162 games. The team that stays healthiest is the one that's going to be there in the end, especially with this COVID, because, I mean, the best player on a team can be out for a series that you're going to play against them because of COVID. So it's just sometimes it's the luck that you have also, especially with this season that we're going to go forward with.
So, listen, I mean, I think he loves playing here. We've heard the story, right, that Scott Boras supposedly wanted him to try to get out there and see the market. He said, no, let's get this deal done. Probably left money on the table, got the deal done, but he's got the opt-out now. And listen, whether you've got Scott Boras as an agent or whether I'm your agent, there's no doubt you saw that Fernando Tatis just signed a 14-year, $330 million contract.
Just like yours. So,
yeah, exactly. I won't make that in my life. Nobody will. I mean, he's a Scott Boras guy. Xander Bogaerts is, you know, we know what he can do. It's got to be there on the radar. You know what I mean? The market. I mean, when a shortstop gets a deal like that, every other shortstop moves up. So if the Red Sox are going to get something done, and I think he's a guy they're going to have to try to get something done to keep him here longer term. Well, that price just went up. There's no doubt.
Oh, without question, you know, and as I said, you're looking at one of the best in the business, and, you know, you're crazy if you don't take advantage of situations like that, and I'm certain they're going to take advantage of it. I wouldn't be at all surprised they start discussing something this spring. You know, we heard Bloom talk about, you know, a number of guys that he's going to talk to this spring, and I would put Bogaerts in that category, you know, because he's a guy that at his age, you really can't afford to lose. Now, you know, you're going to go crazy and pay him the kind of money that Tatis got? I don't, you know, probably not. But, you know, he seems more like the guy that would take another one of those hometown discounts to be able to stay here. Now that this, you know, it's not going to be a discount. It's going to be pretty high up there. But, it may not be Tatis money, obviously. But, you know, I just have a good feeling about Bogey. I really do. I think he really enjoys it. I think he's relishing his role here as a the leader of the club right now, a guy that's been around longer. And I think he likes that, you know, and I think he learned a lot from Pedroia, you know, through the years. So it'll be interesting to see, but, you know, he's one of the guys that, you know, he's going to be going for it. I mean, the Tatis set a new bar for everybody, and it's incredible. One thing I want to say about Bogey, too, before we wrap up, you know, he gets a lot of criticism for not being able to go to his right. Well, let me tell you a little something about playing at Fenway Park. And, you know, I can't say that they do this, but we used to do it when I played here. Burleson always told me as a shortstop that when you're playing at Fenway Park, play guys up the middle, because anything to left field is going to be hard to score. So if you have a man on second base, we would always shade guys up the middle because it was harder to throw guys out, you know, from center field, obviously, than it was from left field. And I think sometimes if he's playing that way, he plays a lot up the middle. And that may be the reason why, because, you know, you give him a little bit of hole at third base because left field is so short. Your left fielder's got to be able to throw people out. We had people like Rice out there and Yaz out there that could throw people out at home plate. So you would give them a little bit, which made it more difficult for a shortstop to go to his right, obviously, and make backhanded plays because of positioning. And you play 81 games at home, so it's a little bit different, you know. So sometimes I think those numbers get a little bit messed up if that's the style they're playing. And that's something I want to talk to him about, because I know that's a style that we used to play, and it worked for us. You know, it worked for us. It used to drive Burley crazy because he couldn't get to some of the balls that was right. But the fact is, Yastrzemski or Jimmy was standing right there behind him making a play, getting ready to throw somebody out at home plate. So it's a little, I mean, that's been kind of bugging me a little bit, because every time I hear that he can't go to his right, I see him make great plays going to his right, you know, but the range isn't quite there, you know. Well, maybe there's a reason for that. Maybe the ballpark you play in has a reason for that.
Interesting. Well, we got to look forward to hearing the when you finally get to ask him that. You finally get to do a game. What, Monday you said is our first?
Monday at 1 o'clock on Nesson.
Bad news. We asked Cora today who'd be starting. He doesn't know yet. So you can't start prepping yet. We'll get around to that eventually.
My prepping will start at 5 of 1 on Monday, because, you know,
a good 5 minutes of prep.
What the lineup's going to be.
Don't even start. You'll be up at 5 a.m. pacing around, driving Phoebe nuts, getting ready for the game. I know opening day, April 1st, is you get the, even if you're here, you get the adrenaline and it's opening day and all that. What does the first Grapefruit League game as a broadcaster mean to you? I mean, are you nervous at all about getting back and doing a game?
Yeah, it wouldn't be normal if you weren't, you know, and it's, you know, you try to, I think on the first game that you do, you try to lay out, okay, what are the things that we're going to be looking at this spring? And what are, you know, what priorities should we be looking at? And for me, it's going to be starting pitching, obviously. That's going to be number one. It's going to be, you know, how the offense is going to shape out, where these guys are going to be playing. They're going to be jumping around to different positions. What's the bullpen going to look like? So there's a little bit of something every day. It all depends on, obviously, who's playing that day. But, you know, we're going to see a lot of guys this spring that we have not seen before. And it's not, getting back to Bogaerts, he made a great point in his Zoom call. He said that, look, he says, a lot of these guys have come from winning ball clubs, and that means a lot. And that, you know, that's true. You know, I hadn't thought about it that way. You know, for some reason, I'm more excited right now than I was like a month ago. And I think Cora has a lot to do with it. I think some of the moves they made toward the end have a lot to do with it. And what they're saying and what they're saying down there and what's coming out of spring training, as long as they believe, you know, hopefully they'll give us something to believe in them about. And it's going to be important for them to get off to a good start.
We talk about this a little bit next week, but as we wrap it up, I think two things. Hey, the range of what they can be is huge. You know, normally, like I've said, you got an idea if a team's good, you got an idea if a team's bad. I don't know. They could win 88, 90 games. They could win 78, 80 games, especially if guys get hurt. That's the big question. Can they stay healthy? But the other thing, and I've heard other people talk about this, but there is a little bit, and I'm not saying they're going to win the World Series. They're probably not. But there's a little bit of a 2013 vibe to this. You know, Johnny Gomes was a veteran and he'd won. Right. Shane Victorino was a veteran who had won.
Right.
Ryan Dempster was a veteran who'd been there and done that. And if you go back and look, nobody was excited about those players of that team. Everybody said, oh, they're just washed up guys at the end of their careers for 3-year deals. And, you know, they came here and they stabilized what had been a mess. And if nothing else, I think the Richards and Andrees and Ottavinos and guys who have been through a lot here, Cordero, not so much, he's younger, but Kike Hernandez, Marwin Gonzalez, they've won championships. You know, all of a sudden you got guys who have been through it. I think they're going to settle things down after last year.
I think you're right. You know, I hope you're right. I just feel that it's so important. You know, we've been through a lot of spring trainings, and I think, you know, more than any that I can think back on, except for the 13 ball club, you know, how is this club going to come together in spring training? What is it going to look like when it breaks camp on opening day? And what is that first couple of weeks of the season going to be? Because, you know, let's face it, fans aren't all excited about this at all.
Right.
You know, and they've got to do something immediately, very, very quickly, to get them at least saying, oh, you know, they're not so bad. And that's really the kind of the cry right now, you know, is, oh, not, they're not so bad, because nobody's expecting anything, you know. And it's like, it's frustrating around here when you're stuck here and you can't be around it. You know, when you're around it down in Florida, you kind of get that sense of, you know, well, you know, look, they're having a good time. They're having fun. You know, they may be okay. You know, here you just sitting, it's very, you know, everything's pretty negative all the time, you know, so we don't get the feeling of what they're getting, you know. And when I heard Cora say the other day, he said, you know, well, the fact is, he says, we're not going to be a great team. He says, we're not a bad team. He says, but we can be a very good team. And I said, you know, I said, that's exactly a good way to put it, you know. And he's full of energy. He's going like crazy down there. So, you know, I'm just looking forward to see him take the field on Monday. And, you know, we'll go from there, because it's going to be a long haul from there.
Listen, after last year, very good. Sounds really, really good. And I keep saying, if you can hang around the wild card, if you could win a wild card spot, that's a huge step in the right direction. And by the way, by wild card time, you might have a healthy Chris Sale ready to make a wild card start. And then who knows, right? So who knows? Hey, good stuff again, as always. It flew by. Looking forward to Monday. And congrats. Get your vaccine, and let's get you going again.
I'll be seeing you in there Monday sometime, I'm sure.
Sounds good. Thank you, Jerry. We appreciate it, as always. And thank you for watching, listening, whatever you're doing. It's the TC and Jerry podcast. We'll see you again next week.